Hi, Steve Artimer here, and welcome to the New Life Live podcast. We hope to provide help and hope in your life through God's Word, counselors, and psychologists as we answer questions from listeners who call with the challenges of life. Let's go to today's episode.
We are so glad that you decided to listen today. You're going to learn something new. You know, we're taking calls and we've got some lined up. 1-800-229-3000 is the number to call. And, you know, Mark, I know that you have something on your mind. What would you like to share with us today?
I do. Okay, so I saw on the news recently that the most recent couple married on the Bachelor TV show, The Golden Bachelor, they were getting a divorce after only 3 months of being married. And so now in the history of the show, after 21 years of the show running and 35 proposals, only six couples are still married. That is a 17% success rate. That's not really good odds for somebody trying to find love. Now, I'm not a big fan of the show because I do think it's emotionally and psychologically damaging for most of the hopefuls. But it just goes to show that the formula of spending lots of quality time going on exciting dates while being disconnected from family and friends doesn't work very well. But how many people tend to date that way anyway? And I can admit that I did. My wife and I dated, married all within 3 months. And what we thought was a whirlwind romance turned into two hurricanes colliding after we got married when reality sets in. Right? We'd enjoyed the excitement of dating, but we hadn't done the hard work of learning how to get through disagreement. So now I've identified four different approaches to finding a spouse, okay? Here's the first one. The first one is the gift approach. The gift approach folks believe that God or a higher power in the universe has brought them together and they're going to marry the person regardless of the red flags that come up. Okay, then you have the by chance approach, and that's the typical storyline you see in romance movies, you know, the serendipitous meeting. And these folks, they're just waiting around until they bump into the one by happenstance meeting. And then you have the compatibility folks. They often use algorithms of websites to pick a partner. They're looking for somebody who has a lot in common with them. You know, unknowingly, they're just trying to marry themselves, somebody who's exactly the same as them. And then finally, you get what emotionally healthy people follow, which is the reward approach. Okay, and emotionally healthy people, they cultivate relationships and they do more uncovering than they do discovering when it comes to finding a spouse. Okay, so unlike a gift, which is something you receive, a reward is something that you earn. And so an emotionally healthy person, they do uncovering by looking at the character of the person, because they know that you find out more about a person through watching them in the challenging times, in disagreement, in problem solving and repair, than you do on going on exciting dates. And so they do the hard work of uncovering by asking the difficult questions such as, does this person respect my no? Do they have self-control and discipline? Do they face their problems and admit weaknesses? Do they admit when they're wrong and ask for forgiveness? Do they forgive others? Are they trustworthy and loyal? Do they have integrity? And what have they learned from the previous relationships that they've been into? And can they take responsibility for their part in those breakdowns? I recently heard someone say the best time to get a divorce is before you get married. Okay, and emotionally healthy people know this, and they learn the most through others, through the challenges rather than through excitement. Okay, so Jeremiah 17 says, the heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? Now, lots of us know this, but the very next verse goes on to say, I, the Lord, search the heart and examine the mind to reward each person according to their conduct, according to what their deeds deserve. So sure, go on dates, but make sure you honestly ask yourself the hard questions before you make a commitment to marriage. Do the hard work so that you can get the reward of your efforts.
I love that. I love that. The hard work will continue on, too. Those questions would be good if you're currently in a relationship. Just keep asking questions and get to know one another. I love that. We're going to hear more from Mark Cameron and Dr. Alice Benton as we answer your calls. Thank you, Mark. That's like a replay. I think there's going to be, people are going to replay. I couldn't write down all those questions fast enough, but I will re-listen. I want to hear it. Thank you, Mark. We'll be right back.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
I'm Steve Artimer with a New Life Moment. If you tear open a cocoon to set a butterfly free, the creature's wings will be severely underdeveloped. That's because the very act of struggling to leave the cocoon strengthens the butterfly wings, preparing it for flight. We too have times of transition and metamorphosis. Yet our remedy is exactly opposite of a butterfly's. If we try escaping God's cocoon before he's done transforming us, we risk undermining and delaying what he's trying to do. So when you're experiencing time in the cocoon, relax. In the stillness, you hear God. In the waiting, your character is formed. If you wait upon God and allow him to release you from the cocoon, you'll be strong and prepared to fly in ways you never could have if you'd struggled free too soon. I'm Steve Arterburn. Visit me at newlife.com and learn 10 helpful suggestions on how you can benefit from time in God's cocoon. Thanks for listening to this New Life Moment.
I love that concept. I know that that's, you know, we've heard that teaching, you know, that we have that struggle that makes us stronger. And actually, Mark, it kind of goes along with what you were just talking about, that, you know, it is asking those tough questions to really get to the core of who that person is in your life that you want to grow closer to. And we're always grateful for Steve's teaching. We are going to go to the calls, and we are going to talk with Kia, who's calling us from Dallas and listens on KWRD. Hello, Kia. How can we help you today?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much for taking my call. I do appreciate this show. I've been listening for a year, and I finally have enough courage to call myself. I am in need of some help. I'm struggling with trust. I've come through about the last 4 or 5 years about with crises, and of course, crises involve people. In 2019, my husband of 27 years asked me to leave. Got myself together after a couple of months. We have 2 sons, and at the time, they were 20 and 25. So there I went into a hotel and got myself a job. I was homeless for a couple of months. Went through the divorce in October of 2019. And hit into COVID, living alone the first time in my life. I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio, and I left home for a better life by joining the military. So I got married early in life, had a couple of kids, and just had my life set. I got saved in Korea in 1996, and, you know, really wanted my marriage and my family to go that direction. So after he left, asked me to get out, it was really difficult. Just to have somebody in your life that long and that be the end of it, just as if there was nothing.
Right.
Yeah, and then my mom died the following year. I stayed with her a month while she was on hospice. This is after my divorce. And so she did pass. She left me her house and her and my 2 brothers very soon. And that brother went on to sue me for 18 months for her will, alleging that I murdered her. I was investigated. By the Ohio DA and everything. I tried to trust again and move in with a guy I'd known for a year and met. No, very mean guy, very. And I should have known I was unequally yoked. He was not in Christ. But I found myself homeless again at the end of 2022. And in 2023, her house sold. I did get a large sum of money, but success can be equally as insane as poverty. Without help, without structure, with being in a very poor place. And so then I hit rock bottom. Even with all of this money, I just was angry. I did need a little bit of help when I was homeless before I won the money. And those 20 to 40 year friendships and family members all are gone. Both of my sons struggle with drugs. The youngest one went on to stay with his father. I could barely look at him. He was so, he'd be so inebriated and things. So here I am. I've managed to get a job. I am able to work. I was doing a bottle of vodka a day on all of that stuff. I've managed to be off of it for just about a month now, and I'm trying to get help, but I don't trust everyone.
Right.
And I just, I'm in a church. I've joined. I joined last month. I'm serving. I served with the children. I did reach out to the pastor of this this campus for mentorship or any sort of, you know, thing that I could use for accountability. Mm-hmm. Since right now, I had a therapist, but she left. The military didn't fund it any longer back in December. I was able to do 3 months with her of the intensive, you know, get with all of that came just like ugly stuff in with it, you know.
So it's been a lot, Kia. You have been through a lot, and you're wondering how do I keep going? Like, how do I trust
yes,
again?
Ma'am. Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. ma'am.
Well, let's start with Mark and let's see how we can help you.
Kia, is there a particular situation you're wanting to trust in right now?
Yes. Well, now that I'm at work, mm-hmm. I feel like the oddball because I don't want anybody close. Unfortunately, I was told I had moral injury. I was wondering if I had a problem with trusting people because I trust everybody. I can find the good in everyone, which has caused me a lot. It's cost me too much. And so here I am. I need to develop relationships. Mm-hmm. And I've set boundaries, which I didn't before. If you were nice and I thought you were nice, you were having dinner with me tomorrow night.
So here's what I would suggest for you, Kia, is I would suggest getting involved in a group. Get involved with a group of other people who can admit that they're flawed, others who might share some of the same issues that you have, whether that's codependency, whether that's addiction. People who can be real and be able to share about, you know, where they're failing, and also people who can be an encouragement to you and help you through things. And I think as you learn to be around others who can admit failures and learn how to recover and move on, I think you'll learn how to do that too, because I think that's where some of your struggle has been, is not been, you know, and I think you admitted that, not been asking the hard questions, as I talked about in at the beginning of the show, you know, going against something that you suspected wasn't the right thing to do, but then doing it anyway. And so we build resilience by, you know, facing hardships, but we also need to have community around us to help us, you know, support us and encourage us and push us through. And I think that could be a real help for you finding a group. And we can help you do that.
Yes. Alice?
Kia, you must feel a desperation about loneliness. I thought your question was going to be the opposite. How do I learn to trust again? But you're actually trying to slow your trusting down because you trust too quickly and allow people in so close. And to know that when you left your marriage, you left the home, that was the first time you lived alone. And so I would think that there's a great urge and compulsion to fill in the space and the loneliness with just anybody who seems nice enough on the surface. And so in addition to that group, Kia, I want to add in that you probably need to learn how to suss people out through a professional relationship where there are boundaries put in place because of ethics, morality, and legality with a counselor, with a therapist who will not come into your life too close, but will get emotionally involved with you in the therapeutic setting to get to know you. And from that relationship, you can learn how do I pace out bringing people into my life. That's why groups can also help, because there's structure to them. But even outside a group, I want you to be cautious not to invite those group members into the privacy of your life too fast. We really have to see people's behavior over time to get to know whether or not they're worthy of our trust before we invite them to dinner or invite them into our homes.
I think, you know, Kia, one of the things that you said was you believe that there's good in everyone. And I think that you can still hold that as you learn discernment, because I think that's where a lot of people get caught up with setting boundaries. They think if I see that there's good in everyone, I can't say no, I can't draw a line, I can't have a boundary. But that's not true. We can see good and have a boundary. And that's practice. I mean, Alice, Mark, do you agree with that statement?
Yeah, I agree with you. And another word that I would put along with discernment and what you're talking about here, Becky, is integration, right? Being able to hold two things at the same time, being able to, because all of us have good and bad inside of us, right? We have the potential to do good things and we have the potential to do harmful things. And so the actions that make us good or bad, not kind of intrinsically who we are. And it's learning to set expectations and boundaries around those things where you can invite somebody close into relationship, but you know, also have a line where they don't cross, like Alice was saying, like having some structure and really using the discernment to question and ask, find out about people's character.
And Kia, I want you to focus on developing female relationships, a sisterhood, and I would say hold off on the next romantic relationship or friendship with a man. You need to learn to do this with safe women first.
Yeah, and I love that idea too, Alice, and the idea of experiencing secure, trustworthy relationships over a period of time. This isn't going to be in the next 90 days, you're going to have all this worked out, Kia. It's really about experiencing that. And I know you just had this separation from the counselor. We're going to get you connected with a counselor, a life recovery group. We do have gender-specific life recovery groups, you know, where all women or all men, specific topics. And I'm going to send you a copy of the Life Recovery Bible. I know that God's working it, as you reached out today, that you've been listening to us for a year and you've just begun. I also want to send you the connection about Emotional Freedom Workshop, because that could be a great way for you to spend the day with us online. And I'm going to invite everybody to be praying for Kia in this next journey of her life. We're grateful that you called. We're going to talk now with Sarah, who's calling us from Los Angeles, listens on KKLA. Hello, Sarah. Thank you so much for calling. How can we help you today?
I'm calling because of a Facebook post on Friday. The post said, "You meant evil against me, but God meant it for good." And it was from Genesis 50, verse 20. It was the story of Joseph. I responded by saying, "This is confusing to me. I get the story of Joseph in Genesis, but I don't understand how it works in my own life." Mm. I come from a background of extreme child abuse, and what I said was, "How can God have meant the abuse I endured for good for me? My father abused me within an inch of my life, and then he told me that he would kill me if I told anybody what he was doing to me. And then he showed that he meant what he said by playing Russian roulette with one of his revolvers between my legs. And then my mother tried to kill me a number of times when I was a baby by suffocating me with a pillow or drowning me in the bathtub. The only reason I survived was because God gave me the gift of multiplicity, and one of my altars named Dead Sally came out and made me stop squirming.
That's so hard. Oops, I think we lost her.
I'm here.
Okay, good. Well, you know, Sarah, I think we can give you some insight. You have had great trauma, overwhelming trauma. Mark, let's start with you, and then we'll go to Alice.
Yeah, wow, Sarah, what a hard life that you've been through. One thing I've learned is never read a single Bible verse, right? You always want to read a Bible verse in context. And of course, the context you're talking about is Joseph talking to his brothers that what they meant for evil, God used for good. And so I don't think that, you know, God meant you to go through abuse so that he could use it for good. I just think that the story of the gospel is that Jesus is the great redeemer. And so that no matter what happens to us, God can redeem to save and help. And he is the source of all good. And all good comes from and flows from through him. And so I think and I'll get to more after the break here, but what I would just kind of clarify for you is that God can use what's happened in your life for you to maybe even help others, even if that's not about learning how does this help me in my life going ahead.
This is a question that people have been asking Sarah forever, really. Why do bad things happen if God is in control? And we'll talk more about this after the break. I'm glad you called.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. I just want to let you know, if you have a question or unable to call in when we're recording, you can go to newlife.com/radio, and there's all kinds of information how you connect with us there. Right now we're talking with Sarah, who's had some horrific experiences in her childhood, and just was wondering, you know, about that passage in Genesis that talks about what you intended for evil, God intended for good, and just trying to make sense out of the pain that we experience in our lives. Alice, why don't you go ahead?
Sarah, we're all pretty startled by the extent of intolerable evil that you survived, and that you have the courage, the strength to call today to talk about this on the air. It just speaks volumes about the kind of woman you have become despite what you have been through. And unfortunately, we don't always get to see how God works things for the good. Sometimes we don't get to see it at all. Sometimes we don't see it for years. As you pointed out, Joseph's story, I was trying to add up in my head, gosh, how many years, decades did it take for him to get to the place where he could see good come out of such evil that he went through, also at the hands of family members? And God's timeline is awfully slow and hard to understand why things are allowed. I want you to know, Sarah, that your call, even just with what you've said so far, it's already ministering to the people listening. To be able to see that a person can survive and still have interest in God, still want to know, what is God doing in my life? Did you know that you're inspiring and motivating people with just what you have said so far because you're willing to speak a part of your story?
Well, that really to me just like that. God has been extremely good to me. I have a blog called God's Not Through With Me Yet, Healing from Child Abuse with God's Help. And I figured out somewhere along the line that God had been protecting me throughout my life from the worst of the abuse, the worst being that my father would have killed me outright. I did try suicide 9 times because I was in so much emotional. But God didn't let any of my attempts succeed, obviously, because I'm here to tell the story. But and it used to make me mad that I wasn't able to kill myself. I would be on the other side of one of my attempts, and I can't even kill myself right, darn it. It turned out one of my altars was named Wordsworth, and she was the one who would call 911. But and I'm not that because I'm alive, and I'm so grateful to be alive.
Yes.
So
yes.
That's extremely good to me.
Well, we are so grateful that you're alive as well. And I think that's the challenge of trying to make sense out of things, but you are working on it, Sarah. You are ministering to other people. Mark, you have any last comments?
Yeah, and
that you want to
I love the title of the blog. I think she said it was God hasn't finished with me yet.
That's it.
And when I think about Sarah's story, I think about the 5 stages of grief that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross came up with, and then somebody came, I'm forgetting his name now, came up with another stage after that, and that was about meaning, right? How do I make meaning out of my suffering? And there's a guy called Viktor Frankl who went through the Auschwitz, I think that he went through, and he lost his whole family, but he was a psychiatrist at the time, and after, when he came out and he survived the war, he wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning. And he came up with a therapy called logotherapy, and it's all about finding meaning in the suffering, right? How do I grow from this? Not that I'm glad that I went through it because it's made me who I am. It's like, I have gone through this, and what can I take away from this? And I think really that's what that verse says. It's really hard to translate ancient Hebrew written 4,000 years ago into our English culture now. And so we got to recognize that too. When we read the Bible, we read it in a English language, and we look at it through that cultural lens. But I think that's really what that verse is saying.
Even as Sarah mentions having altars, it's tends to be a split in the personality that takes place under extreme abuse. And it is a way for parts of the psyche to hide from what is happening. Mm-hmm. And I have often wondered if it's a God inbuilt design that he allows us to escape mm-hmm. what our body cannot escape. And so it's mysterious, but it also sounds like it helped Sarah survive. And I've heard that from other folks who have struggled with the same thing and survived by the same means.
Yeah. And, you know, Alice, to that point, I think what we talk about, even when we're talking about whether it's alternate personalities or even attachment styles, is moving towards that secure, that base, that all connected. We want to integrate and we heal and we move through these situations where it's not first and foremost. And I know, Mark, that's a lot of what your work mm-hmm. is about with secure attachment. It's such a reminder that, you know, we as humans, we can withstand so many intolerable, like you can't even imagine mm-hmm. what Sarah mm-hmm. has come through. Yet here she is continuing to move towards offering hope that there is hope. And, you know, even when her own thoughts were going against her, it's pretty powerful. God's got a word to speak through her. If you're struggling under the weight of something that's so horrific, just know God's got a plan, and it's probably different than what you think, but it's going to involve people that are helpful, that are truthful, that are honest, that are safe. And it's going to take a risk on your part to reach out to ask for that help. We can help you get connected, whether it's with a group or with a counselor or maybe even a treatment center. We've been doing it for a long time, and we have so many testimonies of people's lives that have been transformed through saying yes to that help. We want to help you. We'll be right back after this.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Club New Life supporters who give a monthly donation because they want to continue to offer help and hope in these very, very difficult places. To find out more about Club New Life, you can go to our website, newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, if you're new to us, we drop an episode every weekday. We would love it if you would rate or write a review, which helps more people discover help and hope and helps us share wisdom with as many people as possible. Now let's listen to our counselors as they help people walk through life's hardest places.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. I just want to say a big thank you to all of you who give to New Life Ministries. You are making a difference in the lives of so many people, and we couldn't do it without you. Right now, we are in the middle of a matching gift campaign, and one of the things that I love about this is that there was a group of donors that said, we believe in the ministry, and we want to see it continue going forward, and they pooled together their money for a seed for this match, and it's $400,000. Isn't that amazing? Mm-hmm. It's so amazing, the generous hearts of these donors. And I know that there are a lot of other generous donors out there. Maybe you haven't ever given to New Life, but you listen on a daily basis. Or maybe you've given and you would like to participate in this matching gift. Every dollar that you give will be doubled up to $400,000. So I want to encourage you, be part of this matching gift. Let's make it happen. You can call 1-800-NEW-LIFE with your gift. You can go to newlife.com/donate, or you can text the word match to 28950, and you can call us or any day. Just give us a ring, and we will help you make a difference in the lives of so many people. You know, I just mentioned that, you know, if you can't get to us during a live recording, we have other ways that you can ask your questions. And we have one of those right now. And it's from Lupe, who is a first-time listener. And her question is my relationship repairable with my alcoholic partner? How do I set boundaries? And some of the backstory is that she heard us on the radio for the first time today. I need help setting boundaries effectively with my partner who's been an alcoholic for the past 10 years. At times, it seems as though he's coming around, but always falls back. He's finally accepted alcohol is an issue, but doesn't completely take responsibility, such as blaming others for drinking and actions that come with it. He's agreed to go to church and counseling, but due to money and time, we haven't gotten around to either. And I wonder if he just said that so he can come back. When he's sober, everything is good and manageable, but when he's drinking, I am not safe. Our living situation's inconsistent, and currently he doesn't have somewhere else to live. I've had such a hard time finding a counselor, and much less a Christian counselor. Thank you for any help. Well, of course, we'll get her connected with a counselor, but what would you suggest to Lupe? Alice, let's start with you.
Well, Lupe, I hear that you're working to figure out better boundaries and how to keep yourself safe. And it even sounds like you may have asked your partner to leave and might be deciding whether or not he can or should come back, as he doesn't have somewhere else to live. And boundaries can be tough to hold to when we feel guilty or overly empathic for the person and what they're going through. And what we see so often is that if boundaries are removed too quickly and we let someone back because they're saying the right words, but they're not yet showing the right actions, that doesn't tend to go well in the long term because they're most likely to return to their previous actions. And so I want to encourage you to keep your home safe by only allowing your partner to be close to you if he is showing active recovery. And that would include having a sponsor, going to groups, getting that counseling he promised to, going to church like he promised to. And I wouldn't reconsider getting back close together again without seeing those things over a span of time. We talk about even 6 months being a small span of time to see better behavior change and to be able to start trusting it.
Love that. Mark?
Yeah, and I think here for Lupe, what concerns me for Lupe is the abuse that's happening and not feeling of safe. And I think when that happens, we do need to have a separation. But in separation, as Alice, you're saying here, mm-hmm. there needs to be, you know, a good amount of time for the other person to be able to demonstrate change behavior. And so when you separate, there should be a specific plan that both mm-hmm. people are working on. The person who's initiated the separation says, hey, I need to feel safe. They need to have a plan for, you know, to also analyze, how did I get into this situation? And, you know, what are, you know, if we get back together again, what do I need? And that's how you build the expectations for what the other person then mm-hmm. needs to work on. And then you list those specific things for what the other person needs to work on, and then have milestones to see, are they hitting those milestones? You don't want to just have, you know, a couple of good conversations or a few good dates. You want to see that actual transformation is happening in a person's life and that they're becoming different. And you know that somebody's becoming different when they can take accountability and responsibility for what they've done. They can have empathy for how it's impacted you, and they've made a strong commitment to change, and they built the community, and they built the support and the resources for themselves to continue on.
And Lupe, those kind of standards are so hard to hold to if you're isolated, and you really need a sisterhood around you so that when your partner says, I have nowhere to sleep tonight, can I please come back? I promise I'll go to church tomorrow. You can check in with your sisters and get the clarity from them of not yet. It is not safe until there's a change in behavior. We see surface compliance where, yes, I will do that. The right things are said, and it can be a cover-up to delay you putting those boundaries into place. And so agreement in word only is just insufficient. It is not evidence of change.
And that could be the part that Lupe needs to work on in her own individual recovery work. And it's not that she is responsible for somebody treating her that way, but she's in a cycle. And if she can learn to be more secure, have a stronger no, she's less likely to get back into that cycle.
Right. You know, one of the challenges of that, Mark, and I was thinking about this, is wouldn't it be great if the people who overrun our boundaries would just figure it out? Wouldn't that be great? I would love that. But
then we don't have to do any hard work,
exactly, right. And here's the reality about boundaries is boundaries are that separation between where I begin and end and somebody else begins and end. And the hardest part about knowing where the no is we have to know ourselves. How about all those no's? Mm-hmm. I mean, think about that. Is we are so focused on the person who is causing the pain or overrunning our lives mm-hmm. that we lose ourselves in the meantime. And that's where these things that both of you have talked about, everything from group to counseling, you get to know where you begin and end and what is going to be in that's going to be okay in your life and what's not going to be okay. And you get a clearer picture. Alice?
Well, Becky, I don't think we should ever let finances stop us from getting help, because we pay such a high price by not getting the help. Mm-hmm. And folks, New Life offers scholarships. There are many clinicians who have a sliding scale fee, and there are so many groups that are free to attend, and we can help connect you with all of those.
Yeah. Right. And it's finding those resources out there. There's a lot of nonprofits that are set up to benefit. And just one thing to touch on what you're saying here, Becky, what we often talk about in therapy is learning to be an agent of change.
Yes.
Right. In your life, in your situation, where you take what you have to empower yourself, or go and learn what you need to do to empower yourself, so that you're not waiting on the other person to make all the changes for your situation to change. Because if you do that, you just remain powerless.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that we tell people, and Lupe, I would put this on your list of things to do. We would tell somebody who is dealing with addiction, we'd say, you probably need to do 90 meetings in 90 days, something that will completely disrupt the cycle of use. Now, it may seem odd that I would say the same to you, Lupe, that you would attend 90 meetings in 90 days. We could connect you with the Life Recovery Group. You could go to an Al-Anon group, and you will be amazed at how your thought process and the way that you look at this situation is going to change. We're going to get you connected with those resources, as well as I'm going to send you a copy of Understanding and Loving a Person with Alcohol and Chemical Addiction. We're grateful for the opportunity to connect with Lupe in this way. And maybe you have a call or a question that you can't call in at a time that we are recording a program, but you can go to newlife.com/radio, and we'll give you the instructions of how to submit your question. We all learn as we listen. I know that that's been one of the things for as long as we've been on the air. We hear from people that say, I was listening to the show the other day and I overheard one of your callers, and it was exactly the question that I needed to ask. And so we want to encourage you, reach out, ask the question. Actually, earlier in the program today, we heard from Kia, who's been listening for a year and just today decided to pick up the phone. And I can't encourage you enough. You know, that phone call may mean the biggest difference in your life, and we are here for it. We're going to go back to the calls, like I just said, and we're going to talk with Jan, who's calling us from Seattle and listens on the internet. Thanks for calling, Jan. How can we help you today?
Hi. Thank you so much for taking the call. I thought I had a different question because of my difficulty with discerning the difference between, you know, head and heart and thoughts and feelings. I think with Mark on, I need to know more about secure attachment. I don't know where to begin with that.
Okay, well, you can hear the music, Jan, so that's a great, I'm sure the two are connected, the discernment and the secure attachment. But we'll get more details after this, and we can hear from Mark. You know, Jan, isn't that just like the Lord? You were listening. And you know, you got a new thought. So we really appreciate just the insight, or just the awareness. You know, that's our journey, to continue to be aware of how is God speaking to me? What do I need to learn? What is it that I need to ask for? And to reach out for help. Well, you've got some wisdom with Mark and Alice. And after this break, we will hear more from our co-host and you, Jim.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. You know, just a reminder, we have intensives that we love to spend the weekend with you. I said this, I think, earlier today, and I just want to invite you to go to newlife.com, click on Get Help, and we'll, you know, you'll see all the different offerings, everything from Every Man's Battle to Emotional Freedom, our Restore Workshop, and Intimacy and Marriage. We want to help you in your life. And we've been doing it for 35 years, and we plan to continue on doing that. Now, Jan has called us, and she had one question, but then switched over because Mark's here. We're going to talk about secure attachment. Jan, did you want to add anything to that question, or do you want Mark to just start in on that topic?
Well, I just want to say that I kind of have a life scripture about Isaiah 40 about waiting upon the Lord. So that's all I wanted to add.
Okay, it's a great scripture. Mark?
Well, yeah, thanks for calling and giving your question, Jan. It gives me an opportunity to talk a little bit about attachment here. So you asked about secure attachment. And so for folks who maybe are not familiar with attachment, is that we know that everybody has a bonding style, and that's what attachment is. And we learn our bonding style from the homes that we grow up in. And so we, you know, depending upon the experience that we get with our parents on how well they can pick up on our emotional needs and attend to them, we'll emerge into adulthood with an avoider attachment style, somebody who's very dismissive of their feelings and they're dismissive of other people's feelings, or a pleaser attachment style, somebody who's a people pleaser, they're highly anxious inside, they don't like conflict. Somebody who's a vacillator, who is ambivalent. They're pulled in two different directions. They want close connection, but they get angry when they don't get it, and they can tend to push other people away. Or we might become a victim or a controller. These are the folks who grow up in an abusive home, and they learn that the safest thing to do is either, you know, just stay silent and accept the abuse, or become the controller and say, like, I'm not going to be in the one down position anymore, and so I'm going to control all my environment so that I'm never left vulnerable again. But the great thing that we know is that research shows, and 70 plus years of research, so a lot of research, folks, shows us that if we don't go into adulthood with a secure attachment, we can earn one. And you do that by building what we call a coherent narrative, making sense of your childhood story, understanding how this impacted you in the present. What are your triggers? What are your reactivity style? And then you develop that narrative inside to learn how to self-soothe. And when we do that, we talked about this word here earlier on, Becky, integration. We integrate the two parts of our brain, the part that gives us autobiographical narrative and emotion, with the logic and the reasoning part of our brain. And that's how we can learn to soothe and have self-control. But it's a process, and it takes a lot of hard work. Jan, I'm curious for you, what's the attachment style that you've identified that you may have gone into adulthood with?
It's hard for me to say which one isn't. I fluctuate back and forth between anything and everything, and so that's, maybe I just need to read your book.
Yeah, it's not my book, but it's a fantastic book, How We Love by Mylan and Kay Yerkovich. And so what that might tell me here, Jan, is that you may have had a difficult childhood, and because typically people who have difficult childhoods, they try everything while they're growing up, all different kinds of strategies. And then when they go into adulthood, they can try all different ones depending upon the situation or the person that they're interacting with. And so, yeah, I think it would be a great start for you to read through How We Love, start to identify how your parents interacted with you, how they picked up upon your needs, and just this. And I call them that they're self-protective strategies that we develop. They're adaptive for when we're younger, because when we're younger, you know, we're in this one-up, one-down relationship where we don't have as much power and responsibility as we do in adulthood. And so it serves a purpose for us. But then when we get into adulthood and we are on peer levels, right, now we have more power, more responsibility, but we default to what we've learned. And so for you, it's learning to see, okay, this was adaptive at one point, but it's non-adaptive now. And how do I learn to respond rather than react?
I love that. Alice, what would you like to add?
Well, Jan, as you point out, it's hard to discern between what your head tells you and what your heart feels, and maybe which one are you supposed to trust. And they can be in conflict at times, and it can get really confusing. Why do I think this way, and why do I feel this way? And emotions do make sense, although we don't always identify the root right at the time of why we feel the way we do. And historical feelings can overwhelm present-day situations, and it can really surprise us. Why am I so anxious or so angry over this seemingly small occurrence that just took place? And that's usually because history is getting mixed up with the present. And so as we both figure out our attachment style and then want to grow into secure attachment, it usually has to happen in relationship with other people. Because when we identify what we need. Like, I'm confused. I don't know what I feel. Usually we need another person to help us figure that out. The Bible says that the heart is deep waters, and it's hard to understand our own heart. We need a person of understanding to help draw us out. And so we bring the confusion of the contrasting thoughts and feelings to somebody safe that we can trust, that we've built relationship with, to say, help me figure this out. And that's where the efficiency of the comfort circle comes in, because it helps us then really dig through the thoughts versus the feelings, history versus the present, and it helps us come to an identification of what I need and what I should ask for from the people around me.
I love that. Jana, is that helpful?
Well, I am alone, and who do I get from my comfort circle?
That's a great question, because I know that we do get, we tell people all the time about the comfort circle, and it's incredible. That's where we talk about creating that support system. And it can be everything from groups, and it's not going to happen like the first time you talk to somebody is not going to be the time that you do a comfort circle with them. It's going to take a little bit of a journey with them. But Mark, what would you suggest to somebody who is single?
Yeah, and if you're single, you can work on your attachment style by yourself. And so and that can happen in therapy. Right. When you come to therapy and with an attachment-based therapist, the therapist becomes the attuned attachment figure. They become the person who listens to your story, helps draw you out, and helps put language to what is happening for you. They show empathy, they show validation, and they help you integrate. And so that person is your attuned attachment figure, and they're of sorts doing a comfort circle with mm-hmm. you every time you come to therapy. And by doing that, then you learn, you grow, because you see, like, this person gets me, this person I can build trust with, and then they appropriately challenge you.
Jana, I think I've had a similar experience to you, because when I came across the New Life material, it was aha, and lights came on, and this is true, good stuff. How do I get more of it, and how do I practice it? And so it is by pursuing a group, a weekend, an individual counselor, that we can then really put all this into practice, in addition to reading it and studying it on your own. But move into group, help us get you into those places so that you can practice with
but
people.
But find somebody who's going to be safe for you to be the attuned attachment figure, somebody who's already done the work. And because you can't take somebody somewhere that you haven't been before. So your guide has to have been there before in order to be able to take you there. And the howwelove.com, that's a great way to try and figure out your attachment style too. There's a quiz
on there. A free quiz there. Yeah. We have counselors that we've identified across the country that have that training, that specific training, because we have so many people that have asked about that help. And I hope that's helpful to you, Jan. We will send you a copy of How We Love, because I think that that's going to be good reading for you. Alice, as we close out this day, what kind of hope can we offer to our listeners?
Well, I would like us to think about allowing other people to help shoulder the load that is too heavy for us on our own, because that's the theme of today's show and so many of our shows. Folks, whether you call us, whether you get one of our resources, allow us to help shoulder and carry that load with you so that it becomes lighter and more doable for you.
I agree. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Alice. Thank you, Lily.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope something you heard will help you live in freedom today. If this content was helpful for you, we would love it if you'd take a minute, leave us a review, post about it, and rate it. Remember, we have resources and workshops online for you as you continue your journey. Go to newlife.com and find out more information. And thank you for being part of the New Life community. We know that God desires all of us to live a life of wholeness and healing, and we're so glad that you're here.